Hey, everybody. Welcome to Barca Talk. I'm Brian Henderson, and with me, as always, is Gabriel Quiroga.
Brian, my Barca brother from a different mother and fellow culés, welcome to Barca Talk. We have a lot to talk about, and I'm coming in hot today. Brian, I'm coming in hot.
You are coming in very hot. You have a lot to. You have a lot of things to complain about. But on the other hand, I think you have some nice things to talk about. You had a 4-day weekend because of the Fiesta Nacional in Spain. So how's that been going?
That was good. We have so the Fiesta Nacional was on the 12th, which was Thursday. And what happens a lot of times here in Spain is they take the Friday off. And what they call that a puente or bridge, right? So they bridge the holiday to make it a 4-day weekend. And so most of Madrid left again for the 4-day weekend. So for me, it was perfect. I got to recover a little bit. I had a guest, a really good friend of mine, visit me from Phoenix, my friend Andrew. It was great to have him. But also just we went out every night, basically. So I took the Fiesta Nacional to kind of recover, watch some movies, and, you know, just hang out pretty much. But it was really nice.
So what's partying like in Madrid with Andrew?
Well, see, my friend Andrew's he's good people, and he definitely likes going out for drinks and so forth. He had been here before in Madrid, and we basically discovered new bars in my neighborhood and went to have cañas all the time. Again, I'm just not used to going out in so many nights in a row. So he came on Thursday, and it was Thursday through Tuesday, basically, just every night going out. So,
yeah, man, you're not in your 20s anymore.
Correct. I'm not in my 20s anymore. Plus, I had to work on Wednesday, which was a little rough. But I made it through, and knowing I was going to have a 4-day weekend. So, but it was great to have him. He came for my birthday party, which was last weekend, and it was great to see other friends that came to visit as well. It was a good time. But again, I'm not 20 anymore, so my recovery powers are not what they used to be.
Yeah, you can't just like pop a couple of ibuprofen and have some water and, you know, take a run and you're fine anymore.
Correct.
It takes like a day or maybe even more to recover.
Correct. I went out last night and I'm running in slow motion like Andres Gomez. So we'll see. we will see. But I'm coming in hot today. I got a lot of things on my mind. I got a lot of things to complain about. So let's start the show then.
Before we get into Barca stuff, let's do some sort of Barca adjacent stuff or things that are pertinent to us, things we care about. Let's start off with your first complaint. The U.S. men's national team failed to qualify for the World Cup finals in Russia. And I imagine a lot of our listeners are also invested in this. It's the first time they haven't qualified since 86. And we have a lot to say about it. Why don't you kick it off?
This is a nightmare on so many levels. I just can't get over this. This failure, not only as a World Cup, but as a federation, as a program, as soccer, football in the United States, it's just a complete failure all the way from the bottom to the top. And it's, you know, for example, Brice Arena, he should have resigned right there at the press conference. His comments at that press conference were absurd. Like, he's like, oh, this is just a blemish. Are you kidding me? Like, you can't win in Trinidad Tobago. You can't get these victories in CONCACAF. And yeah, CONCACAF is a difficult run, but at the same time, we have the most population, we have the most money, we have the most resources, and we cannot pull a team together. Just a couple other things. We haven't qualified for the Olympics in the last two cycles, which is a joke. That also led to poor performances in the senior team. And this needs to completely shake up the foundation of U.S. Soccer Federation from the kids all the way to the top, because we're not progressing. This is now, it's kind of funny. I was not a big fan of Jurgen Klinsmann, but he actually brought out a lot of points pushing the players, and the players, now I'm looking back, were the problem. It wasn't Jurgen Klinsmann. It was the players. Jozy Altidore, fuera. Michael Bradley, fuera. Like, you got to be kidding me with these players. Like, these guys can't even hack it in Europe, and then they come back to MLS, and then they're captains of the U.S. team. I woke up the next morning because I didn't watch the game, and I had the ESPN alerts, right, on my phone, and it says, the first one was, men's national team fails to qualify, almost threw my phone against the wall. I was like, are you kidding me right now? Like, this is, I've been so invested in this team for so long, especially since it's like, all my childhood and all my life, basically, because I love the World Cup so much. And Bruce Arena, like, this guy, I mean, he had a great World Cup run in 2002, but this is the worst thing he's ever done. as a coach. Did you watch the game? I mean, what did you? I mean, what was the?
Yeah, I watched. I watched some of the game. It was pretty disappointing. But let me walk this back for a second. So just teach me. What is fuera?
Fuera is out.
Out. Yeah. Okay.
So basically, like Jozy Altidore, this guy just kills me. He has like flashes of potential, but he's so lazy. His work ethic is terrible. And Michael Bradley, everyone thinks he's like this great passer, this great player. He's terrible. He couldn't even play in Italy. He couldn't play in England. Like, no, these guys. And the other thing too is the MLS. And I don't know if MLS, you know, what's going on with that? Like, I can't watch it. What they're doing, they don't have relegation. They don't have promotion. So the clubs are very comfortable. They don't push players. The only shining point is Pulisic, and he's the only one, but he's playing in Germany and he can't carry the team right now. And he scored a goal, but just watching the highlights of the team, like they looked like they were like just in a practice game. Like it was such a joke. I just, everything, and especially Sunil Gulati, the president, just, oh my God, this guy just infuriates me so much because he's just like, oh, well, we made $100 million. Great. Fantastic. Invest that money.
Yeah, where's the trophy? Yeah. Where's the qualification?
It's just like,
where's the progress?
Exactly. And like, you know, it's funny, like when I played soccer as a kid in high school and stuff, like I would always play, you know, pickup games or club or whatever. And there was always like immigrant kids that were playing, right? And they were really, really good, like really good. And when was the last time we had an African player, like a true African immigrant player or Latin player or Mexican-American player? I cannot believe that we don't have any of these. We're not going into these lower socioeconomic groups and pulling these players out, especially with all this money. I mean, that's what we need to do. We need to get these players where the kids have to pay to play. That thing's a joke. That doesn't happen anywhere else in the world. It's a luxury sport and we're soft and it kills me. So thank God I live here in Spain. That's my adopted national team now. So viva España.
Right. Well, okay. So for me, I want to go back to what you said about Jurgen Klinsmann, and I felt the same way the whole time Klinsmann was managing the team, was that it wasn't him. In fact, I was talking about this a year or more ago with my dad, and I was saying, you know, the problem with the U.S. men's national team is not the manager, I don't think. It's the fact that there are so many Americans on the team. You know, we act like they owe it to us. It's very entitled.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the funny thing,
like the attitude among the players.
Yeah, exactly.
So entitled.
You know, it's funny. It's just like, I don't know if we talked about this before, but I've always talked about it with my friends here and so forth, is that the U.S. doesn't have a defined style, right? You know, like when I think of Alabama football or SEC football, I think of power football and defense. When I think of the San Antonio Spurs, I think of really good defense and smart players and this type of thing. Like the U.S. has no identity of style, and that's a lot of our problems. I always think that we should go and be always a 4-4-2 and adopt the style of Atletico Madrid, be really good on defense, set plays, have really good goalkeeping, and counterattack football, because we don't have the possession. And defense is always going to keep us into big games, but we don't have a style. And, you know, this is not, I know it's not the U.S. men's national team podcast, but at the same time, I just was like, this is, oh my God, I can't get over it. I can't get over it. Like, they don't want to play Copa America because it interviews with MLS. That's what happened last time. I'm like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. And I can't believe the glory years are going to be, we're not like, when you look back now at the whole U.S. soccer World Cup performances, like the glory years is 94 and 2002, two times, right? And you could have progressed from that and we didn't. And now it's a joke.
Okay, well, a couple of points. Stephen Colbert actually had a good bit about this on his show, and he reminded us that the U.S. does actually have a very successful soccer team in the women's side. They've won 3 World Cups and they've never not qualified for the Women's World Cup. So we're talking specifically about the U.S. men's national team and all the failings in that entire system. And that has all come to the surface in this recent loss and inability to qualify for the Men's World Cup. But to bring it back into the Barca arena, We did get a question from our buddy Don Marlin 503 on Instagram, and he says, with the recent loss of the USMNT and elimination of the World Cup, do you see Pulisic stock drop? Does FCB jump on that? And of course, we've talked about this before, you know, the possibility how much we would love to see Pulisic, an American, playing for Barcelona. But I don't think that this affects Pulisic's value.
No, it does not affect him at all. He's probably the only player that's going to be left on the team going forward, or should be left on the team. Everyone else, fuera. His stock's not going to drop because, again, he's 19. He's playing at a premier club, getting lots of experience. You know, he was talking about how in his practices he has to continually fight just to play. So his stock is not going to drop, and he is the only hope that we have as Americans following soccer. Like, he is the only one doing something. He's the only one, you know, making strides in the international game. He's the only one that's in Champions League. He's the only one playing in and out on a Bundesliga. So this is our only hope going forward. Everyone else needs to follow his path, basically. Leave the U.S. when he was 16 to find an academy with a proper club and get developed that way. Get playing time. Learn the language if you need to learn a new language. And really get yourself involved that way, because you can clearly see he's head and shoulders above everyone on the U.S. men's national team. Work ethic, talent, just everything, how he shows, like, that he actually cares, you know. He was, like, crying, you know, these type of things.
Yeah, and he's still just a kid.
And it's, you know, it's really sad he's not going to get this experience. You know, this would have really, really helped him, because not only if he would have had a good campaign, who knows what would have happened if he would have gone to a bigger team, or, you know, a bigger transfer or something like this. Personally, I hope he stays with Borussia Dortmund. I think it's a great team for him currently for the next couple of years. And then if Barcelona wants to pick him up. That would be a dream.
Yeah, and I imagine that there are plenty of American fans of European clubs who are thinking the same thing that we're thinking. Like, maybe, you know, one day it would be so great to have him on that club. You know, for us, I'm sure there are American PSG fans who would love for PSG to pick him up. Maybe it's just the idea of having an American on one of these top European clubs. It would be a real morale booster for a lot of us. But, you know, we'll see what happens with that. I think that, you know, there is a possibility maybe one day, but or not. But like you said, I think he's in a good place at Dortmund right now. It's working for him, and he's developing a lot in that side. But let me turn to another issue that came up in the international break, and that's Argentina, right? So Messi had a hat trick in their last match, which managed to send Argentina to Russia. And on top of that, Valgrin is going to be glad that Messi won't have to travel to New Zealand for a playoff, you know, in the middle of their campaign at Barcelona.
Yeah, so this is the opposite of the USMT, right? Like, I woke up and I also had this alert. It's like Messi hat trick. I was like, that MF-er, good God. Like, I can't stress this enough of how much I love Messi. Like, we, you know, obviously we've talked our love for Messi, but, you know, watching these highlights and, I mean, he did everything again, right? Like we said last time, he drove the bus, he cut the oranges for the team at halftime, he laid out the uniforms for the team, and of course he did a hat trick. The game was brutal. I watched the game. It was brutal to watch because Argentina has no chemistry, and they've had, like, I think 60 or more players that have started one game for them in this whole cycle, which is insane, or 70 or something like this. But Messi, again, comes through for them. And you know what's crazy, too, is that I don't know how you feel about this. Do you think that he needs to win a World Cup to be the greatest player? This is always, like, the debate, right? Everyone thinks in Argentina they always have Maradona first and then Messi second, for the most part. But for me, I think Messi is a much better player than Maradona just because he's done it consistently for such a long time, and he doesn't do coke. That's the other thing. So,
yeah, he gets points for not doing coke. you know, it's always a difficult conversation to have because, you know, comparing players from different eras is always, you know, fraught with problems. The game was different. I mean, like, really, that's the main thing, is that the way that they played in Maradona's time is different from Messi's time. And does he need to win a World Cup in order to be considered the greatest player of all time. In Argentina, I think he does. I think for most, I don't know, you just bring so much of your own personal baggage into that whole discussion of, like, is he the best? Is he not the best? I think he's already the best. I don't think it's really up for debate. But also, you know, I'm a Barcelona fan, so I'm clearly biased. And anyone who's a diehard Real Madrid fan would point to Ronaldo and say, look at what everything Ronaldo has done. Why, you know, what makes him not the best? I don't know. I mean, you just bring so much of your own personal garbage into it. But then again, that's why we care. That's why we do a podcast like this, is because we have so much of this personal investment in things. So it's hard to objectively say, you know, what are the parameters? What are the criteria by which we would judge such a thing? And he's clearly the best. I mean, that's my conclusion, is that he doesn't have to win a World Cup to prove that he is the best. Now, then there's the other issue that people often forget when they talk about this, which is, you know, one player does not win a World Cup. One player cannot win a World Cup and never has. Even when Maradona took them to the championship, took them to the World Cup and won it with them, there were still 10 other guys on the field. He didn't do it all by himself. It takes a team. And sometimes it takes a superior impact player to really elevate the team. And he's doing everything he can right now, and maybe it just worked better under Maradona. But yeah, the team is failing. And we got a comment from a listener actually about this, what Sampaoli said, and I thought it was a really beautiful sentiment. Sampaoli said apparently that Messi does not owe Argentina a World Cup. Football owes Messi a World Cup, and I think that more or less sums it up.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, Argentina has a lot of work to do. I mean, they qualified. They don't have to do the playoff. However, Sampaoli has a lot of work to do. They still need to figure out their squad, their rotation, their formation, how to use Messi the best, because they basically almost have Messi as a midfielder in this weird 4-4-2, 4-3 kind of hybrid thing. And he has no chemistry with the other players. Like, he's setting them up with these amazing passes, and the other guys are like, oh no, I didn't know you were going to pass to me. And they're like late on the thing, or they're offsides. And it's just like him playing with kids. You know what I'm saying? So, we'll see. I mean, right. The first step is you got to get to the dance, right? That's the first step. And whoever, you know, you're playing 4 weeks, momentum takes you through a little bit of luck, and you never know what Argentina can do, because they have the talent. They just need to get it put together. So we'll see how they fare in the next World Cup.
Yeah, so let's get into the Barca talk, quote unquote, the proper show. So coming up today's show, we have some news from the front office. We're going to talk about the Ballon d'Or. We're going to talk about a hilariously boring interview with Andre Gomez. Check in with the women's side and Barca B, do a quick recap of La Liga. And then we're going to talk about our first non-win of the year, the match against Atletico. And of course, as we always do, we'll tie things up with a preview of the Champions League and La Liga matches coming up. So first up, the news from the front office is that Albert Soler and Raúl Señey will leave their roles with Barcelona. And Bartomeu is going to announce a new executive structure at the club's General Assembly on October 21st. So that should be coming this week. And this restructuring comes after two vice presidents, Carles Villarubi and Jordi Mones, resigned in protest of the decision to play the Las Palmas match behind closed doors a couple weeks ago, if you remember that. And Pep Segura will be the new general manager, and that's already confirmed. And he's going to take on a number of responsibilities of Soler and Sanyehi. So I'm wondering about this sort of shakeup in the front office. Is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? What are your thoughts?
So I think that it's kind of a mixed bag still, because, you know, it's interesting to see how they resigned. I don't really know much about them. So we'll see if they're yes men or not. I'm kind of just mixed about it. It just happened like a week ago, so we don't know anything. We'll see what happens with the January transfer. If they do something, maybe that'll give us some indication of the direction they're going to go and how how Pep Segura is going to manage the team and maybe get some transfers out. Like, for example, Turan, get him out of out of Barca and get that money back somehow. So it's interesting. You know, I don't really have too many comments about it because I don't really know. You know, it's funny because I don't really know how they come up with their strategy, their plan, because they're not as transparent. You know, kind of like in the States with the NBA or NFL, you kind of have more information of what the front offices are going to do. But with football, they're definitely more disguised, more secretive. So it's kind of hard. You only see the result, right? Like when they actually sign someone or when they're talking about signing someone, but you kind of don't know what kind of strategy they're going to go with. So we'll see what happens with Pep Segura being the new general manager.
Yeah, well, these two, Soler and Sagne, who are going to be leaving, they've been really the chief negotiators in the transfer market. Soler, he's been involved with the signings over the last few years of Turan, Vidal, Denis Suarez, Umtiti, who at 25 million euro, I think we can easily agree was a steal. And we had one listener check in and say that they think Umtiti is really undervalued. And I'd have to agree. We value him very much here. I think maybe because he's maybe so kind of low profile and chill, he gets a little bit overlooked, which is in a way a good thing because he shows up at the games and that's all we really need. But yeah, Soler was also involved with like Dina, Andre Gomes, which is, you know, that's a thing we've talked about over and over again. Paco Alcácer, you know, at 30 million euro, he's not playing a lot. It's not that he's a bad player, but he just can't seem to find a place in the team. But then, you know, he also oversaw Nelson Semedo, Pauli, Dembele, and he got Velgrin. So, I mean, losing Soler, I think it'll be probably not too big of an impact. It would be, ideally, we would get someone in there, or maybe if Pep Segura, maybe he'll do an even better job moving forward, getting some players out, like Turan, like you said, and, you know, continuing to bring in, hopefully, you know, younger promising players who can really like establish the future for the club. Whereas Senyehi, you know, he's actually been with Barca since 2008 under Laporta. He handled the deal that brought Neymar from Santos in 2013. And apparently he also convinced Neymar to turn down PSG's 2016 offer. But I guess he just didn't have the juice to convince him to stay again. So, I mean, maybe losing him could be a bad thing, but hopefully Segura can step up. And again, we don't know what the resulting structure of the club is going to be, what the front office is going to be. We'll learn about that on the 21st. And I don't know, it's just maybe reshuffling deck chairs. Who knows?
You know, like in the States where you have the main general manager, he's the one that kind of makes all the personnel decisions. And then he kind of has his scouts and his kind of assistant GM. They help with the decision making and finding players. Well, and mostly in football, right? Like it's kind of, yeah, this is the general manager. He's ultimately making the final decision, but it's a group of them coming together with this decision. So it's almost like a lot of chefs in the kitchen. That's why I think there was a lot of chaos this summer with the transfer market, because there was a lot of discourse of who they were going to sign, how much they were going to sign. So again, you know, we saw the list of Sanelli. How do you say his name? Senlehi? I can't even say his name.
I'm saying it's Senye. I don't know. Sanye, I don't really know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, Sen not going to work here anymore. So we're going to see the strategies going forward. We'll, you know, obviously January is coming up very soon. So we'll see if they make any moves to get rid of any of that extra contract. Like, for example, with Paco Alcázar and Adu Turan, I'm curious to see if they loan them out and if they take anyone in, especially like Coutinho. There was a random rumor that just started with Coutinho getting signed in January. I don't see that happening just because of complications with Champions League and all kind of things going forward.
Yeah, you got to just let it go. Coutinho is not coming. It's not going to happen. I mean, it might happen a couple of more years down the line, but it's not going to happen this year. But moving on, let's talk about the list of Ballon d'Or nominees, which was announced this last week. Messi and Suarez are the only Barcelona players on the list. And I found the list really funny, actually, because it includes defenders such as Bonucci and Sergio Ramos, and goalkeepers like Buffon is on there. And that's really weird to me because, let's be honest, we all know that a goal scorer is going to win the trophy, probably Ronaldo, right? And as a side note, I still believe that all of these awards, whether it's FIFA's the best or the Ballon d'Or, they're still lame. These individual awards that people vote on, it's not exactly based on any exact, you know, statistics. There's no criteria. I mean, that's the whole thing about sport, is that we play the game and there's a result to the game. And that's how we choose winners. You know, this is all just, you know, it's popularity contest. It's exactly the opposite of what sport is supposed to accomplish.
Yeah. And again, there's no set formula for these awards, right? No one knows if it's the most goals that you have to score or the most team awards or victories, or there's no set rule. So everything is just askew, basically. So again, you're right. This is a popularity contest. Before I moved to Spain, I thought the Ballon d'Or was such a big deal. And it's now that I've lived here, it's such a joke. Like, they're just like, yeah, it's nice that they win, but at the same time, it's almost like a chore. We have to fly there. We have to go to this gala midweek. It's just another thing they have to do, and it's just annoying for them more than anything. So, again, I think it's still lame, but it's going to be tight, you know, because especially if Messi finishes strong this season, I think Ronaldo may pull it off this year.
Yeah, and then there's just the question of how each of these players are doing right around the time that the voting is coming to a close, right? If Messi's having a great season, and he is right now, and Ronaldo is not, but if you look back over the last year, you know, Ronaldo had a great year last year, and he won the Champions League, and they won La Liga. So, I mean, there's probably, he would have more juice if they had done the voting then. Maybe he would have won it. And when the voting comes to be, you know, coming to a close, if Messi's having a great year and Ronaldo isn't, is Messi going to win it? There's just so many problems with it. It's so silly. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. Let's talk about something fun. So you sent me this picture yesterday during the game. It was from the paper, and it was like some really awkward high school looking photo of Andre Gomes holding a football. And next to it were all these questions that the reporter had asked him, and his responses. Tell me more about this. What paper was this in, for starters?
So I don't know what paper was. I was watching the game last night with some friends, and my friend who's a Real Madrid fan, we were just joking around because I kept telling him, man, I love Umtiti. And I just kept saying, because he's really young, as a joke, like as a thing. And he's like, oh, by the way, did you ever see the Andre Gomes interview that he did in the paper? And I was like, no. And he's like, you got to see this. So he forwarded to me, and we were just laughing our asses off because he is the most like vanilla gray person ever. Like, is this guy serious? Like, first of, we're going to post this picture on our Facebook page because it's glory. It totally looks like varsity blues type of picture, your varsity soccer picture next to a tree, like holding a soccer ball, just in case you don't know he plays soccer. Anyway, right. So the reporter asked him a bunch of questions. It's like a get to know him type of questions, right? They're really simple. So first they ask him, the first question is city, and he says Porto. All right, whatever. The next question, a place to disconnect. And his answer, various. What? Like, okay. Like, you couldn't just say just to help the reporter out, right? Like the beach or my grandma's house or something like this, but varios, right? That means various. The next thing, movie. And he goes, good question. I don't know. Is it?
Yeah. And okay. So clear this up I want you to make this clear for me, because I was looking at it and it looks like the reporter is just asking him a movie.
Correct.
Any movie.
Correct.
Not your favorite movie.
Correct.
Not what you think is the best movie of the last year, but just name a movie.
Correct.
Good question.
It's like,
I don't know.
Like, Brian, a movie. I would probably, like, you ask me, I say Big Lebowski, boom, just like that, right? Hey, that's a movie.
Yeah,
I like.
It's a movie.
The next one, a song. And he goes, I'm not going to say any song because I don't want to upset anyone, but I listen to a lot of music. Is this guy serious? Like,
easy, man. Yeah, you're not on trial. Just name a song. Name a song that you like. It's okay.
The next question, a book. And he goes, I don't know. I'm like, like.
Well, okay, maybe he's not a big reader.
That's fine. But say the Bible. I don't know. Say a book. Say a book, you know, try to be funny or something, you know. Oh, my God, this guy. The next question, a plate of food, like a food, you know, just food. And he's like, I don't have a problem with food. First of all, no one said you had a problem with food, okay? But if I have to take one, bolognese pasta. Is this guy serious? Like, come on. Like, something.
At least he gave an answer.
That is
At least
true.
He said a food.
That is true. That is true. Then the next.
That's progress.
Then the next question is a historical person. He said Eusebio, obviously Portuguese. Then he said, superstition, doesn't have one, obviously, because he's fucking gray. some sort of hobby. And it's just like, he doesn't have a hobby. So in this response, he says, I go with my family to a good movie. But he couldn't name a movie before. So whatever.
Yeah. Oh, man, your story is really not lighting up.
Correct. And this is the best question of all time, is the last one. Some other talent other than football? He responds, nothing special.
Well, then you really should be a better footballer. if all you do is football, you don't read books, you don't go to movies, you listen to a lot of music, but you don't want to say, and you eat, maybe you're eating too much pasta bolognese.
Correct.
But you should probably be a better footballer if that's all you got going on in life.
Let me get the answer correctly. He said, something, but nothing special. Wow. What a load of laughs this guy is. Jesus.
Yeah, super entertaining.
Oh my God, this guy. We couldn't stop laughing yesterday when my friend read it, cuz like he's like, when he said the food thing, my friend did like the Italian hand thing. He's like, "Oh, pasta bolognese," right? And we're just like just dying, cuz it's just like these are the most absurd answers. Like, have a little personality, showing. You could lie. No one cares, you know? Like, do something.
No one's going to, like, grill you on this. It's just for fun. It's just a light puff piece, you know?
Oh, Andrew.
Oh, Andrew, yeah. All right, well, let's talk about football for a minute or two. So let's start with the women's side at FC Barcelona. So they're still at the top of the table. With 15 points, they've had 5 wins out of 5 games played. They're tied with Atletico Madrid on points, but they're way, way ahead on goal difference. They defeated Avaldsnes from Norway. That's the club that I was talking about last week that they had played. They had their second league in the Women's Champions League round of 32, and they beat them again 4-0. So they're going ahead to the round of 16 in the Women's Champions League. There were goals from Lika Martins, Tony Duggan, Andresa Alves, and Mariona. And so they're just, I mean, really, they're on fire. They're tearing it up, particularly, I think, thanks to bringing Tony Duggan and Lika Martins in, which they just came this year. They're ripping up the women's league, domestic league, and they're looking really strong at the moment in the Women's Champions League. Of course, you know, we'll see how that plays out as we get deeper into that tournament.
Yeah, I mean, the women are looking fierce, you know. I'm curious to see. This week I'm going to make a point to watch one of the highlights of the games, because I kind of want to just figure out if they're also playing a 4-3-3 and if how much they're adopting the tiki-taka style and also just the what they're doing, you know, kind of just get a better grasp of what they're doing, because I'm interested now. But yeah, they're definitely tearing up the women's side. Curious to see how they'll do in the Champions League, because that obviously is their ultimate goal, since the league isn't as strong. And also the Champions League, you know, you have teams from France, from Norway, you have really strong teams in Germany. And so the competition is way more, is stronger. So therefore the Champions League is definitely a better mark of how good they're really progressing, because they're a relatively young team, aren't they? A young organization, I think. They haven't been around for that long, or how?
Well, Barcelona has had a women's side for several years now. I'd say it's in the neighborhood of 10 years. I don't have that in front of me right now, but yeah, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 years. But just the women's game has been escalating over that time, and I wouldn't say that Barca has been really at the vanguard of that until recently. You know, they're also talking about fielding a women's team in the U.S. Women's League, which would be, I think, very exciting. It might be more of a brand thing than a style thing, but in any case, that's good. So they're really, at the moment, the club is taking on the women's game more seriously, and clearly by signing the players that they've signed, they're really making a move to be a dominant club in the women's game. So it maybe over the last year or two, they've really stepped up their concern with that.
So I just asked Google, and you're wrong. It's 30 years.
30 years.
So they were actually founded in 88. But I think, like we talked about that recently, they've been making a huge push, because overall, Barcelona is always looking to be the best quote unquote club of all sport, right? So this also includes the women's side. So they're definitely investing because they can see the potential. And I think it would be awesome if they get a women's team in the U.S. I think that would be not only for branding, but exposure, but also hopefully bringing some really great U.S. players to Barcelona as well. So I think it's a great strategy because, you know, it's almost like it is an untapped market, the women's side, and also just investing that kind of money and also being really good as a women's team that just makes the whole Barca brand even stronger.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of the club overall, I mean, have you seen that handball team? Handball, man, it's the next big thing. Get on it.
I actually like the roller hockey.
Yeah, the roller hockey. Oh, how about arena football? They should really American arena football, which has, you know, really taken off in the States.
Yeah,
it's been huge.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's talk about the B squad, Barca B. They won their game this last weekend against La Jolla Lorca, 1-0, with a goal from our new signing, Jose Arnaiz. They lost their previous match to Numancia, 1-0. They drew against Oviedo before that, 1-1. With a goal from Arnaiz. They're 13th in the table in the second division. And right now, Arnaiz is their top scorer for the season with 4 goals. Carlos Alenia has 3. And really, Arnaiz seems to be the one to watch. Actually, Talk FCB, the YouTube channel, made a great video about him last week that I was watching. And he seems to be the real deal. And I'm wondering how soon we're going to see him in the first team, because it seems like almost a foregone conclusion that that's going to happen.
Yeah, so really good results from Barca B. Their main goal should just be to stick into the second division just so they can develop those players. If they 13th, 12th, 11th, just be comfortable, just staying in Segunda. So we'll see. I'll have to check out this Arnaiz guy. So it's that Talk FCB YouTube channel has great content, great videos all the time. So definitely check out that channel. We'll give him a shout out on Twitter. But yeah, it's really good content. I'll have to check out that video.
Yeah, I mean, Arnaiz, he just signed, came from Valladolid. And he's a strong winger, like a sort of traditional proper winger. He really likes to get forward, get past his man, cut inside, make things happen. He's confident. He's strong. He's fast. And he's clearly very skillful. And he can finish. So we'll check back with him next time. And I was thinking about this, you know, thinking about the women's side and the Barca B team. And tickets to these matches are really cheap, if not free sometimes. And I'm just thinking, if I were in Barcelona, I would go to a lot of these matches because it's expensive to get into the first team matches, even against a weaker opponent. It can get a little pricey, but you can be in the perfect seats for a B squad game for 15 euro. And that's a fraction of the cost.
Yeah, not only that, but you're up close and personal. You know, you're a couple meters away from the players. You get better exposure to them. You can actually get autographs. You can actually talk to them a little bit. And it's just like what you said, the minor leagues, basically. You know, it's like minor league baseball.
Yeah. Have you ever gone to a minor league baseball game?
In the Bay Area, we had the San Jose Giants, which used to be a feeder team, obviously, for the San Francisco Giants. So you could see some future stars coming through. And it was a lot of fun because not only was it cheap, but, you know, it was in San Jose. So it was really close to my house. So, example, if you live right next to the stadium, you go check out some quality football, support Barca, see some young future stars, hopefully, for the team. And, you know, like I said, if you're a kid, it's great because you can definitely go talk to them, get autographs, are more approachable for sure.
Yeah, and right now, you know, with the Barca B team, you know, you could go and see Alenia play and really up close, and he's already logged some minutes with the first team. And I mean, unless something happens and they decide to, you know, sell him to another club for whatever reason, he's going to be on the first team one day and he's probably going to be a major player. Or that seems to be the path that he's on. So you could go see him right now up close for 15 euro if you're in Barcelona.
Exactly. And that's a really good point because right now you can see Elena. And also since they're in Segunda B, you're going to see some pretty good soccer too. It's not going to be such a huge drop off from La Liga.
Yeah, absolutely. And with the women's side, you know, you can absolutely see the top players in the women's game for like next to nothing. Like Martins, you know, she was just named the top woman player of the world. And so you can just go and just watch them play and for like next to nothing. And especially when you're in those situations where there's an international break and you want to see some club action, but all the top players are, you know, playing for their countries. Something like that would be, I think, a fantastic alternative. But anyway, like I said, if I were in Barcelona, I feel like I'd be going to a lot of those. Speaking of the first team, let's get into the first team and look at La Liga and do a quick review. I was watching the Getafe-Real Madrid match, and I was so excited when Getafe scored. They were 5 minutes away from drawing Real Madrid 1-1, but Ronaldo put his team ahead with his first La Liga goal of the season. Of course, he scored goals in the Champions League, but this was his first goal in La Liga. And that one shot put it away, made it 2-1, and shot Real Madrid up to second place behind Barca with 17 points. Also, Sevilla, who have been showing pretty well so far, they lost to Athletic Bilbao, so they were kept at 16 points. And we're recording this before Valencia's match. If Valencia win that, they'll go ahead by 1 point. They'll go ahead of Real by 1 point. But if not, Real are right where we'd expect them to be. And with this draw to Atletico, Real are actually the ones who really won, because they're in second place now, 5 points behind us, with Atletico and Valencia right behind. So since Barca and Atletico both dropped a couple of points with that draw, Real are the ones who really benefit the most from it. So the league is shaping up exactly the way you'd expect it to.
Yeah, it was just a matter of time before Real Madrid would come back right behind second, third place, especially with the other teams kind of faltering in the last couple of weeks. The team that I'm really interested in watching, I'm going to watch the match tonight, is Valencia. Valencia has been looking really strong, especially now that they have an actual breathing, competent manager in Marcelino. So they actually have someone that actually knows what they're doing over there. So, and also they've gotten rid of a lot of the terrible players that they had last year that had terrible attitudes and so forth. So they're looking really strong this season. Obviously Sevilla is still going to be in the mix, but man, like leading up to the match and the sports shows here, they were talking about the grass in Getafe. Like that was a sports topic here for 10 minutes or something, that against Barcelona, they let it long. And then, of course, for Real Madrid, they cut it perfectly just so Real Madrid could have a nice, plain surface for them to play. I was really upset because, obviously, I thought they were going to pull off the tie, but, of course, Real Madrid, you know how they do. Ronaldo got that last-minute goal, and they put him ahead. So the league is shaping up. We have some tough matches coming up, and we'll see how Barcelona fare in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, and so let's get into the Atletico match. Now, we actually have a lot to talk about concerning this match, and there's a lot of background before we get into the game itself. So let's dive into that. Going into this, and I guess it still has remained the case, Atletico have not beaten Barcelona in La Liga since 2010, which was, I think, pretty cool, and they managed to maintain that unbeaten streak. But Barcelona were hoping to tie the club record for the best start to the season. They were going in with 7 straight wins. They were only one shy of equaling the start of the 2013-14 season when they started with 8 straight wins. But it was not to be. And probably the biggest sort of peripheral news about this match was the fact that Barcelona canceled their application for a ticket allocation for their fans after Atletico lowered the tickets that were previously offered, citing logistical problems. And there are actually a lot of little issues about this that we could get into. But basically, Atletico had initially offered Barcelona 1,000 tickets, but then citing commitments to their socios, they had to lower it to 250. And then Barcelona just said, no thanks. We don't want any of your tickets. We're going to take our ball and go home.
Like, this stuff to me is just so petty. This is like the same stuff as like always, you know. It's like there should be a rule, as always, like you have a certain amount of tickets allocated all the time, no matter what team you are in La Liga. So if you're, you know, it doesn't matter if you're Barcelona, Getafe or whatever, and you're going to go play at the Wanda, you have 1,000 tickets. End of story. That's it. But all these like depending on these logistical problems, probably because they just moved to like Windows Vista or something. They, you know, these things like always happen here. It drives me mad sometimes because it's just like, it's so backroom deals. You know what I'm saying? Like nothing's ever on the, there's no rules about this, right? There's no rules that say they have to allocate this number every game. They need to put that. And they always have these little, you know, schoolyard tantrums, as you say. And of course it's just 250 tickets and it's like, come on. 250 tickets? Are you kidding me? That's like, I could have 250 people in my house, I think, you know, like that's it's such a small number, you know, it's such a small number. And especially here with a lot of Barcelona fans that want to go see the match, they can't go because you have to be associated. It's a really complicated process and it's expensive as well. So,
yeah, well, there are a couple again. Of there are a couple of issues that that this brings up. So like the main one probably that some people might think is that it's has something to do with politics because, you know, all of this is happening in the midst of continuing political turmoil in Spain between Spain and Catalonia. But Atletico, the president, Enrique Cerezo, he insists that there's no political aspect to this. There are no political overtones. And honestly, I believe him. I think I don't think he's hiding anything on that. Again, I do think that the fact that they can change from 1,000 tickets to 250 in the last week is not cool. But I don't think that there was any particular, you know, political aspect to this. You know, Atletico weren't going in with the Spanish flags on their jerseys like Las Palmas did. And he continually insists that they just there. It's not that they're apolitical as a club, but obviously, you know, the people who run Atletico, they have their own personal politics, and then that's going to bleed into certain aspects of how they run the club. But Cerezo seems to be very clear that Atletico is about sports and leaving politics outside of it. And I mean, I don't know. I'm not super involved with following them, so I don't know. But I have a tendency to believe him. But then the other thing that comes up for me is this question of, I think you've told me that there isn't much of an away game culture in Spain, like certainly not as much as there is in, say, the English Premier League.
Exactly. And that's why, because in the English Premier League, they have a set rule of how many tickets are allocated for away teams. So they can already plan in advance when they want to go to an away match. And they also have a set time. Here in Spain, they always change the time in the day, either on a Saturday or Sunday or time. So it's really difficult to make plans. Let's say, for example, you want to see a match in Sevilla, for example, and it's when you plan it out, it's on a Saturday at 2 o'clock. And then the week before, they're like, oh, it's Sunday night at 8:45. And you're like, oh, but I already bought my train ticket back. So you miss out on the game. So this always happens a lot here. They don't plan it. They don't keep the times fixed. There's a lot of flexibility in the timing. And then also, like I said, there's no set allocation for tickets. So, you know, let's say if I want to see a match, I have to really, really battle other people to get that ticket. It's very difficult. So for me, it's just easier to watch at home.
So the old Spanish way prevails, and it makes it difficult for away fans to go to those games. But it's also worth noting that it's not like they were barring Barcelona fans from attending. You know, there were some Barcelona fans in the stands, but, you know, they just weren't in their, you know, allocated their own little pen up top of the stands, all cheering together. They were just sort of peppered all throughout the crowd. So, yeah, again, they weren't restricted from attending. But yeah, all of the scheduling things and the changes, the sudden changes in ticket allocations, it makes, yeah, why would there be an away game culture in Spain when there are all these barriers to it? But on the scheduling tip, we actually got an Instagram comment from Schnarfen, who says, I swear, he actually had a lot to say, and I'm just going to pick out this one point. He says, I swear FIFA is out to get us, because going away at Atletico right after international break is grueling. What's your response? I have a response to that, but what's your response to that?
First of all, it's not FIFA. Second of all, this is what the schedule is. I mean, we played a lot of easy teams before, so this is going to happen. We're going to have to play difficult teams. Yeah, it would be nice to lead into maybe, you know, a Getafe and then Atletico Madrid type of a situation. But this is what the schedule is. The team knows before what's going to happen. This wasn't like they just Atletico Madrid just popped out 2 weeks ago and it's like, oh, we got to play Atletico Madrid. So it's not FIFA. It's just what the schedule is. There's nothing you can do about it. More importantly, it's difficult, right? Because, for example, Messi and other players come from World Cup qualifying from across the world, and they have to come back, and then they have to play Atletico Madrid, which is always, always a tough match, not only physically, but mentally.
Yeah, although you got to admit, I don't think that Messi really was suffering too much after his flight. He looked good.
Messi's not human, so you can't. He's completely the outlier. But look at Suarez, right? Like Suarez looked lethargic, and you know you could tell that he played an important match on Wednesday or Tuesday night, and then had to fly across the world. So don't ever look at Messi. Messi's that guy always wants to play ball, and he'll play ball anytime, anywhere with anybody. You know, he just loves playing ball.
He was probably playing on the flight from Argentina back to Spain.
Probably. He was like juggling in the seat and stuff, just passing the ball. So they actually, what I read too, is they actually sent out a private plane for him. Barcelona did to pick up Suarez and Messi to get him back faster. So before we played quote unquote easier teams. So it was bound to happen that we're going to play Atletico. It just happened to fall after the international break.
Yeah, it's unfortunate scheduling, but yeah, I don't think anyone is out to get it. I mean, the schedule, everyone has to play everyone, and you know, sometimes it just works out that way. But of course, we do appreciate Schnarfin checking in and telling us all of his thoughts. Now, before we get into the game itself, I want to say this is the first game that I've watched at the Wanda. I mean, I wasn't there, but this is the first game I've watched on TV that was happening at the Wanda. And man, that place looks awesome. I mean, just the LED lights all around the rim of the canopy and the way it just swirls around. It looks like a really great atmosphere. And the seats, the way it's designed so that the crowd is like really present. It looks like a really great environment for a game.
Yeah, it's a brand new stadium. It just kicked off this season. There is a lot of fanfare about it because it's the newest modern stadium in Spain. Of course, it has all the bells and whistles, like the new the new flat screens they have all over. It's like one of the only stadiums that shows the games live. You know, like when you're in the game, you're actually watching it on TV kind of a thing, which I think is really cool. Always adds to the fan experience. But also, like, it just has everything. It's more comfortable. The only thing, it's kind of difficult to get to because there's only one metro station that gets there. And I've seen pictures of, like, it just looks like cattle being herded into this metro station, you know? So that's the only bad thing about it, but everything else it's going to be the new national team stadium too as well. That's where the national team's going to play their major games, just because it's a modern venue. It's nice. It can fit a lot of people, and it's in Madrid. So I think going forward too, that's where they should play the Copa del Rey. That's where they should do all the major matches in Spain, just because it's so nice, new. It has all the LED things. It looks like a really cool stadium. I'm going to definitely try to go to a game this year, probably in the spring when it's a little bit less intense of trying to get tickets for the first matches. So I definitely want to go check out a game there, just because you got to go see the new stadium. And plus, they've been doing a lot of fan activities before the game. So like for the Barca game, they had activities starting at 12 o'clock and the game was at 8:45 kickoff. So they had like parties, concerts, these type of things, because they want to kind of bring this pre-game fan activity to the Wanda, right? Because the Wanda is basically in this suburb that they have lots of space to do this. So they kind of want to create almost like a tailgate party type of atmosphere, because there's not enough bars there to house all the people like it was in the Calderon. The Calderon's in the neighborhood with plenty of bars to go drink some beers beforehand. But in this neighborhood, in the Swanses neighborhood, which is in the east of Madrid, there isn't too many things set up yet. So they have to set up these huge tents, these type of things. But it's actually been really a good outcome, because more fans are going before. They're having more of a pep rally type of atmosphere. So it's actually been working out. So I'll definitely check out a game. Obviously take pictures, and I'll talk about it on the podcast when I do.
Yeah, oh, I can't wait for that. But so let's finally talk about the game itself. Now, I'd like to start off with some of the listener reactions we got to the game, because we got a few of them. And the main theme was this. First point, why did Valverde put Gomez at right winger? And that same sentiment came from Schnarfin, Meech04, and LRock88 all on Instagram. That's the first point that we have to really talk about.
So let's get into that first point. This is one of my hot takes, right? This is my coming in hot on this one. This is such a nightmare on so many levels. I can't. Oh my God, this guy hurts my heart. Andrew Gomez, man, this guy just is like in the way. He's always in the way. That's not like, I can't explain it even more. Like, he's not, like we've already talked about, he's not particularly fast. He's not particularly a great passer. He's not particularly a good shooter. He's not particularly a good header. Like, he's just at like above average at all these things, right? Just like his beautiful interview, right? Of, you know, Mr. Vanilla, Mr. Gray, you know, this type of guy. But him playing right wing, when I saw the lineup, I almost dropped my phone. I was like, he doesn't add anything. He does not add anything. And every time, he just looks like some guy they picked off the street. And they're like, we need another 11, so just go play. You know, he just like sits there. He doesn't do any passing. He's just like in the way. I don't understand. I do not understand. If this is our quote-unquote strongest lineup, how is Andres Gomez in it? Like, I would much rather have your man crush playing right wing because he's way more flexible in passing. He's more dynamic and he has better eyes.
Beautiful eyes.
Exactly. Yeah. Beautiful eyes. So for me, I would like, if you're going to play this formation, I don't even know what it was last night. It was chaos. It was complete chaos because it leads us to this, our next sentiment from the other listeners. Go ahead and introduce the next sentiment or reaction.
Well, the other big reaction was to Suarez. LRock88 says, Suarez is either not match fit or mentally incapable of performing. And he says, should Paco be considered either sub for Suarez or to start? Paco isn't my first choice, but what other options do we have?
So let me ask you this. I don't know if you saw in the game yesterday, but I pointed out to my friend who's the Real Madrid fan. He loves football. He's pretty good at watching tactical stuff. I pointed out to him, I said, look where Luis Suarez is right now. And Luis Suarez was like playing left wing top corner. I was like, that's not where he's supposed to be. Luis Suarez does not have a great first touch. His attributes is like he's a bull in a china shop, right? So you have to kind of just give him the ball up in the middle and let him create and do stuff. He needs a lot of opportunities to score the goal, but him playing up at that left wing position that he was doing last night, that was another chaos thing. It was just like you had Andres Gomez on the right wing and you had Luis Suarez on the left wing. It's like, what's going on here? I just don't understand. So,
well, okay. So, why don't you collect yourself and I'll chime in here. So, yeah, there were definitely times where Suarez was very far out left on the left wing, and obviously he didn't do anything over there. It was more of a momentary thing. In general, he was trying to position himself right where we would expect him to be, right where he wants to be in the center. And I mean, if I were guessing, I'd say it was about 50-50. But when he's out on the left wing 50% of the time, that's definitely not good. He needs to be in the center 90% of the time. I mean, if you want to talk statistical averages. And also, I have various specific reactions to Suarez, but the main image that sticks with me with Suarez is the one of him after he'd scored his goal holding his ear up to the crowd as if saying, you know, what do you have to say to me now? Like, well, Luis, I have a couple of things to point out. Yeah, like, let's talk about the 80th minute when Dooley, that's what I'm calling De La Feu now. I'm taking on your habit of giving nicknames. De La Feu is too hard to say, as you have proven. So let's just start calling him Dooley. So Dooley had a free run down the right side. They were expecting him to keep going and try to cut in because that's what he'd been doing since he came on. But instead, he sent this real dagger pass to Suarez in the box, but he couldn't control it. It did look like the ball was coming in pretty hot, but I'm going to go ahead and blame Suarez and his touch. You know, maybe that's not fair, but he could have put it away if he could have taken the steam out of that pass, if he had had a better touch, and we'd be two more points ahead. So I don't think that just by scoring one goal, you've silenced everyone. Clearly your touch again has, I wouldn't say failed us. I don't want to be too harsh, but, you know, we could have had a win if you had a better touch, Suarez. That's all I'm saying.
You know, when Suarez played for Liverpool, he wasn't asked to have this amazing first touch, right? Because that wasn't in his DNA. It wasn't how they play in EPL. If you watch an EPL game, their first touch is not the greatest because of the conditions of just the way they play. It's just not what suits them. And when there is a player with a great first touch, they they stand out completely, like David Silva or Kun Aguero, like these type of high-end players. There's only a couple of them in the EPL. But Suarez's first touch last night was on display as, like, what not to do. You know, like, what not to do. Like, how many times did he get the ball a pass in? And he would try to get a move. I remember in this one instant play, he tried to do a move, and the ball came up behind him, and he lost the ball. And I was like, is this guy serious? Like, your one goal is to hold the ball, like, as his position, just to hold the ball and create chaos in the middle. And he's not doing any of that right now. I don't know what Val Green's asking him to do as his role, but he just looks completely lost, and he's becoming ineffective. And for me, that's really... I don't know. I wouldn't say dire straits, but it's not going in the right path. He only has one goal. Mind you, it was last night, you know, it was a great goal too, but he hasn't been scoring as he's done before. And he just looks completely lost out there. And your boy Dele, I'm going to call him Deuces. How about that?
Okay. Deuces. All right.
Deuces came in, and of course he did his patented Deuces move, and everyone knows that's going to happen. And again, that was a great pass he gave to Suarez, and Suarez muffed it. And especially in a game like last night where you're not getting a lot of chances, you have to make the best of those chances, and Suarez muffed it, you know. And it's just, you know, he needs to get the ball in chaos in the middle, either a header or a turnaround shot or something like this, and he's just not getting those opportunities. He's outside the box. They're asking him to, like, cut in and do these crazy moves, which his feet, he's like telling his foot to turn left, and it's not moving. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like there's a disconnect between his legs and his mind. You know, it's like one of these things. So,
yeah. Whew. Well, let's bring it back to Gomez for a second, because honestly, I think this was, as far as how he was on the ball and how he played, it was one of the better performances I had seen from Gomez. And so I'd say he, for him, played pretty well, actually. But he was way out of position in the right wing, and he and Semedo were not linking up well. And it was very much like they had no idea what to do with each other. They had no chemistry, no communication. And then it was really interesting that Semedo was the one who came off rather than Gomez. Gomez got shifted over to the left when Iniesta came off, and Sergio Roberto and Deuces came in. And then they were pulling things out to the right, opening things up in the center more, which was great once that happened. But overall, I mean, I feel like Gomez actually had, again, for him, a pretty good game. He was just in the wrong place. So, again, I think that falls to Val Green.
I agree. Like, yeah, he made passes. He did a couple things. But for me, overall, he was a disgrace because he's clogging the attack. He's not doing anything. He has no clue out there. He has no chemistry with Semedo, even though they both speak Portuguese. So you would think it would just be even easier for them on the field. But these type of things, yeah, he made passes. He didn't, like, really lose the ball. He was kind of just there. Again, he vanilla, like everything vanilla. So my point is, like, yeah, he didn't lose the ball. He probably had a good accuracy passing and these type of things statistically. But for me, he was always in the way. For every time I saw him with the ball, I was like, get out of the way, get out of the way. I was like yelling at the TV, you know, it's like, he's just in the way, you know, it's like, just move, you know? So that's why for me, I would have much rather had Sergio Roberto, because not only would he have a better chemistry with Rakitic and Semedo, but also he has so much more dynamic flexibility cutting in, doing the passes. He's like one of our only people on our team that actually pass or cross the ball without getting blocked. Did you count how many times our crosses got blocked last night?
No, but it was a lot.
It was a lot. Like Alba, Gomes, like I was flipping out with that. It's one of my biggest pet peeves, because if you're a professional player, that means that you can do things at a high level, and crossing the ball is one of those traits. And it drives me insane. It drives me insane that these players, they don't cross early. They wait for the player to come so close to them that they have no angle to cross the ball. That's why Sergio Roberto's cross was so great, because he did it early. I don't know if you watched the replay. He didn't wait for the player to come. He saw the action before, crossed it. It was a clean cross, a great cross, and it scored the goal. But a lot of time these players, they wait too long for the defense to come to them, and they block more than half of it. These type of things, like for me with Gomes, it's just, I cannot believe he's on the team. I just cannot believe this. And my Real Madrid friend was making fun of it last night, because he was saying that when they signed Gomes, that one of the things was like, we stole him from Real Madrid. And my friend was like, I'm so glad he's not on Real Madrid. I was like, this guy, I can, oh my God. Like, you're telling me last night that either Paco Alcacer wouldn't have been better last night?
I think maybe he would have.
At least he's fast.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he would have put some, you see the lineup. Let's say Felipe Luis, he sees the lineup and he's like, Andre Gomez out there? Pff, easy.
Right.
Done. Like, I got this. You know, now I can focus on Messi more. Like, it brings no fear to anybody. No fear.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree with you. I just try to be kind.
I told you I'm coming in hot today.
Oh, no,
I hear you.
I feel it. I feel the heat coming from Madrid. The heat out of Madrid. That's you. But yes. In general, I'd say the story of this game was really just one of close calls. And there were close calls on both sides, really. But of course, I want to focus on our close calls. I mean, even 30 seconds into the game, we broke through. But just Messi couldn't get the ball out from under his feet, and he put the shot wide. And that right there in those first 30 seconds, that pretty much sums up how most of the game went. Just a lot of close calls. The first half was definitely rough. All of these positioning things, you know, Gomez getting in the way of everything, nothing quite clicking. All of that was happening. But Ter Stegen, who I have chosen as my man of the match, he made some crucial saves in that first half when Atletico were most threatening, and he made those really crucial saves that really made the draw possible. But going through some of these close calls, like look at the 70th minute, most of them are in the second half, everything went right. You know, if you look at the replay, it was right around 69, 70 minutes. Barca played the ball forward very quickly from the top of the first third, Umtiti to Busquets to Rakitic to Messi on the right just outside the box. He runs in, plays it back to Rakitic running forward. You know, he backheels it, return. And at that point, Rakitic had taken most of the defenders with him. So it was this great opportunity. Messi had the shot, but he put it wide because he had to get the shot off quickly with Godin coming in with a slide. So it wasn't a completely free shot, but like that was a really close call that they missed.
So yeah, I mean, the first half was brutal. Like we were, I think at one point we had 70% possession at one time. They showed the stat and I was flipping out of this because, again, we were going back to our old traits of going side to side, but not really being dangerous, right? I mean, how many times were they just playing it all the way around, all the way back, all the way around? For example, Suarez wasn't creating that chaos in the middle for them to do those balls in the middle. And so for me, again, when you're going to play these tough matches, especially against Atletico, the Atletico are, they want you to have the ball. They don't care because they want to counter, especially when they're playing quote unquote better teams than them, that Barcelona needs to shoot from further distance a little bit more, you know, break up that monotony of always passing the ball from left to right. And I know that is the Barca style, the possession to try to create that opportune moment. But we have to make that a version 2.0, you know. I always tell my friends, I'm like, they just need to shoot a couple times and then the defense starts to come out and then you can possess around them. And it just opens up a different dimension. But if they always know that you're not going to shoot from outside, like take Atletico's goal. They shot from outside the box and it was a great shot, right? I mean, it was a perfect angle and they tried other shots. I remember Griezmann tried a volley kind of outside the box. They tried another shot, but it gives you that you always have to pay attention to it, right? And so as a defender, that's always going to keep you on your toes. But if you know that, for example, when Iniesta is just playing the ball to Alba to Iniesta, Iniesta to Alba, Alba to Messi, Messi back to Busquets, Busquets back to Pique. It's like, yeah, I get it. We're possessing the ball, so we don't have to play defense. I get that theory. I understand it. I like it. But at the same time, we have to be dangerous. The point of the game is to win the game, and we need to score goals to do that. And especially if we go up 1-0, then all of a sudden Atletico is chasing the match and then we can counter on that. And then we're more dangerous that way. But when Atletico score the first goal, they all of a sudden can just bring everyone back, be more solidified on defense. And they know that, I mean, when was the last time that Barcelona scored from outside the box? I mean, I know they did this season, but that was like once, you know, and also they're not shooting that much. So these are the type of things that just kind of, we still need to adapt for these big games. And I know Valverde made some adjustments because in the second half, it was evident that they were doing more attacking, these type of things. They had more opportunities. But again, it's just start with that in the first half.
Yeah, I agree. And there was actually, speaking about that, there is one really good thing that Gomes did, which is that he took a shot from outside the box. It was a horrible shot. It went way over the goal. but he at least attempted it, you know? And I thought, okay, this is when he's been shifted over to left mid after Iniesta came on. And at least he took the shot. It was, you know, it was bad, but if they had been doing more of that, it would have had the exact effect that you're talking about. It would have, you know, drawn the defenders out because they would have suspected, okay, there might be a shot coming here. We don't know. You just got to create threats and get them thinking and get them guessing and draw them out. And again, it was horrible, but at least he did it.
You know, it's funny. Like, I always think of the NFL strategy of defense when I'm watching football as well. By the way, I was just laughing. You almost made me spit my water out when you said the Gomes comment.
Yeah, I saw
the
that.
Gomes comment, because all I could think about was either, was he trying a field goal kick or what was he trying on that kick? It was just like, just a bit outside, you know? It was like, whoa. You know, this time. Anyway, when I'm watching the football match, I use what I used to play, you know, football or watching NFL, these type of things. You're trying to make a team one-dimensional because it's easier to defend. Right. So in American football or NFL, if it's a passing team, you want to make them run the ball. You know, you want to change their attack, basically, just to make it one dimensional. And Barcelona does that for other teams, especially with bigger teams. They just say, OK, we're trying to make this amazing goal by working the pass. But if they did more crosses, if they shot from outside, if they did the variety of attacks that they could do, then all of a sudden that puts the defense so much on edge, because now it's like, not only do we have to watch the ground game, the passing at our feet, but now we have to keep track of the headers, and then we have to keep track of the shots outside. I'm just saying it for the big games, you know, because that's when the defense is going to be better and stronger that we're going to face. Obviously, against like Getafe or some other lower tier teams, we can possess and we're still going to win the game. I'm comfortable with that. But these big games against Bayern, against Chelsea, against Real Madrid, Atletico, we need to vary the attack just to have more opportunities like we did in the second half, and eventually led to a goal with Suarez with the header by your man crush Cross.
Yeah. Now, there's one other close call that I do want to talk about, and this was actually in the first half, and this was Messi's free kick. It was the 57th minute, hit the post, and it was so beautiful. I mean, he got it over the wall, and the spin was ridiculous. Even in slow motion, the spin was out of control. And of course, that's actually what caused it to hit the post. It was that it had too much spin on it. It went outside. But just the amount of spin he can get on that ball while also getting, you know, the height to get it over the wall. And it was like fairly close. It was just outside the box. Ray Hudson had the best thing to say about it. He says he could bend light. And he could absolutely bend light. You know, you could see like the curvature of the earth in his free kick sometimes.
So I have three things for you on that. I don't know if you know, Brian, but when I used to play, I was the free kick specialist. So when I watched it, So I couldn't bend light like Messi, but I am left footed, and I love watching Messi and his angles, because I put myself in the position. Obviously, I'm not even a tenth of the talent what Messi could do with the free kicks, but I love watching how he sets up and where he goes with it. If you watch the replay of that, you have to watch the wall. The wall that Atletico sets up, and then right before the action, is hilarious because they're falling down, they're pushing. My friend pointed out on replay, he just said, what a wall. Like, it was just chaos, right? But that chaos led to a hole where Messi could go over it and have a better angle at it. And then the other thing I have to tell you is there's a Ray Hudson Says Twitter account where they, during the matches when Ray Hudson, they just quote the random lines that he does on Twitter. It's fabulous. I'll send it to you, but it's fabulous. So like something like this, they like, Ray Hudson, it has like his picture. It's like, he could bend light, you know, and it's like, that's his tweet.
Okay. That's something that I might actually use Twitter for. But yeah, it was just these close calls, one after the other, you know?
Exactly. And especially in the second half, I had a better feeling that we were going to equalize and we were going to escape with the point, because again, we were doing the varied attack. We had more opportunities. They were fouling more. And so when that happens, you know, Messi's going to have more opportunities for a free kick, and he almost scored. And Oblak is a top tier goalkeeper, and he was almost beaten a couple times on those free kicks.
If you put those two goalkeepers, Ter Stegen and Oblak, head to head, I mean, those are easily two of the best. Oblak is hard as nails. He's tough to beat. He's probably one of the strongest things about Atletico on the defensive end. I mean, they have great defenders also, but he's just a great, you know, gatekeeper.
Yeah, and Ter Stegen, man, he had such a great game. And, you know, more and more, he is just becoming the future, you know. Like, he is going to be Barcelona for a long, long time. Like I was telling my friend last night, I'm so glad we have Ter Stegen, because not only does he have the physicality that you want in a goalkeeper that we've talked about. Question for you, who has a better first touch? Ter Stegen or Suarez?
Yeah, exactly. Ter Stegen has a better first touch than our number nine.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, you see the passes that Ter Stegen drops in the bucket. Like, it's ridiculous. And having him as our goalkeeper, his reactions, he keeps getting better and better every year, too. That's the other thing. Compare him his first year in Barcelona. He was good, but he kind of looked shaky at times. But now he commands the back line. He makes great saves. He's definitely anchoring the defense. He's doing a lot of things really, really well now.
Yeah, and that's exactly why he was my man of the match. So let's talk about your man of the match.
My man of the match was Umtiti, Puyol 2.0. That's what I'm going to start calling him. He's this guy. I was telling my friend last night, his name is Gabriel too. So we were joking around. Like, I kept saying, Puyol, Puyol, you know. But how many times did he intercept plays last night on the counter? Like, he was impressive. Now, the only one time I remember was Griezmann going through, but that was because of Piqué and Umtiti. There was a bad communication. But for the most part, Umtiti broke up so many plays. He always makes the right pass in chaos. Do you ever notice that? That's such a hard quality to have. You can't teach that. That's just like something instinctual. When he should turn left, he turns left to make the pass. Like, if there's a defender on his right, he doesn't go back. He always picks the right pass. And last night, he dominated. He looked really, really strong. Him and Piqué are such a formidable pair now. Every time Umtiti's out there, how confident are you that we're going to have a good defensive showing? I mean, that's the thing.
I know. He always makes me feel good when he's out there. I trust in the defense. I mean, honestly, I knew that he was going to wind up being crucial in this match. And I also knew that he was probably going to wind up being your man of the match, so I didn't want to take him. But I was starting to track all of the plays that he broke up and all the good stuff he did. I mean, I started losing track. I made a couple of lists. Like, in the fifth minute, he made a really crucial tackle. And then on a free kick in the 29th minute, he was big in the box, broke that play up. I mean, just his height, his physicality, and his intelligence, all of these things you're pointing out, they make him really just so critical to the defensive end of Barca's game.
Like, think of the last time there was a striker in the last 2 years that outraced Umtiti to a ball. I can't think of any. Like, there has, you know, I remember a couple of times, like, Mascherano, just because he's not the fastest. There's been a couple, you know, when Mascherano's on defense, he has that kind of vulnerability that to him that he can get outpaced by someone like a Griezmann or something. But there was a couple of times when TT just, when I remember being taught in when I was younger, when you're chasing the ball, right, you don't want to chase in a direct line. You almost kind of want to veer into the guy so that it takes away his speed. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not going one-on-one. And Umtiti does that brilliantly. Like, every time there's a guy that he's going one-on-one, he takes the guy's lane and gets the ball and then just passes it and just steals it. I mean, last night he did it probably two or three times.
And that's exactly why you call him Puyol 2.0, because that's exactly what Puyol would do.
Exactly.
He was able to read the lanes and cut off the lanes and get the ball.
And also, he sees the play. There was like a couple plays where Atletico made a great pass in the box. And who was there? Umtiti. Like, he saw the play like two plays before. And he's just, like I said, Puyol, I love that guy forever and ever. Umtiti, all he needs to do is grow his hair long, and he's the new Puyol. That's the only thing he needs. Umtiti is my man crush. All right, that's my man crush.
Okay, fair enough.
I get lost in his play, not his eyes.
Well, I mean, that's the thing with Sergio Roberto, though. He has it all, you know. He's just hanging out with his friends and his fiance around Barcelona or in Israel. They're going to the shops, and he just looks like a normal guy. And he has these beautiful eyes and this incredibly cute dog. Oh my God. His dog, Baloo, is the cutest. I follow him on Instagram. And then he comes up big in games, too. Like, the way he's just cutting inside, he just opens up everything on that right side, everything he does. So, I mean, he's my man crush for many, many reasons, not just those deep blues he's got.
I know. I mean, when he came, I agree with everything you said. Like, when he came into the match, he definitely changed up the flexibility. The attack was more dynamic. I just wish he would have came in for Gomes, because I would have liked to seen Samedo still in there, because Samedo is fast. To see them link up maybe could have created more chaos on the right side. But again, like we talked about earlier about the crossing, Sergio Roberto's decision to cross the ball early before, I think it was Felipe Luis came to him, and also delivered a really dangerous ball where Oblak didn't come to punch it out, and Suarez to finish the way he finished. That was just a quality tic-tac-toe type of play. I mean, the way he headed the ball, and also he headed it down to give that, you know, unpredictability of where the ball was going to go. So overall, your boy did very well in the match. I just wish he would have started.
Yeah, overall, it seems like Colin Valverde out on this. It seems like a really strange game to experiment with, because that seems like what he was doing. It seemed like he was trying kind of an experiment with the lineup, obviously with Gomes. And then, you know, again, everything changed once Sergio Roberto and Deulofeu or Deuces came on. and so, yeah, we're just left wondering why in this match against Atletico at the Wanda do you want to try these experiments? So I hope that he learned something from that, and that moving forward, you know, we'll see more threatening lineups.
So before we move forward, I have a quick question for you. Do you think Mr. Gray, Mr. Vanilla, Mr. Andrew Gomes has like nude photos of Val Green that he's like blackmailing him to like keep him in the starting 11? Like, what do you think? Like, this was a topic in our conversation last night with my friends, because how is this, like, exactly what you said? Why did he choose this game to experiment? Why did he choose this game to have Gomes? Like, have him play against a lower tier team if he needs minutes, or what's the deal?
I think it's possible that he has some incriminating evidence on Val Green, maybe. I think, and this is definitely on the level of conspiracy theory, I don't think that this really holds a whole lot of water, but I'm going to say it anyway. I get the feeling, because there were similar questions last year with Luis Enrique, like, why is he playing Gomes? And he kept standing up for Gomes and kept, you know, having confidence in him, even though Gomes was not having good performances. And so my conspiracy theory on this is that the pressure is coming down to the manager from upstairs. I don't know who in the front office. I don't know if it's, you know, one of the vice presidents or one of the sporting directors, or if it's coming straight from Bartomeu. And I also don't know that there's any validity to this at all. But if I'm theorizing or hypothesizing, I'm wondering if, you know, maybe there's some kind of pressure that's coming from the front office down on Val Green, and the same thing was coming down on Luis Enrique. Like, hey, you know, this Gomes kid, you know, maybe he could use some more minutes. Be real sad if something were to happen to you if he didn't.
I think it's perfectly plausible, because like that's the only explanation. Or maybe he's like the greatest practice player, you know, like in training.
Yeah, maybe he's just like amazing in training.
Yeah, in training he's like, whoa, this guy's amazing. He's like Portuguese Messi. And then he comes out to the game and he's like, what's going on here, you know? So yeah. I don't know.
Hey,
I just
guys.
Yeah, exactly. What's your favorite book? The Bible.
I don't know. Not even your favorite book, just a book.
Correct. And then he's like, what's a book?
All right, so we'll hope that that next week goes better. Speaking of next week, we have two matches coming up. The first one is going to be on Wednesday in the Champions League against Olympiacos. Some background on this. Olympiacos has yet to get any points in Group D of the Champions League. And, of course, Barcelona is riding high at the top of that group. And the other two teams in the group, Juventus and Sporting, each have had one win and one loss. The wins were both against Olympiacos, and the losses were both to Barcelona. So what are we going to expect to see here? Val Green is generally good about squad rotations, as we've observed so far. What kind of lineup do you think we should expect to see?
So I definitely think it's going to be the triangle of Ter Stegen, Umtiti, and Piqué. And then I think it's going to be Alba, and I think it's going to be Vidal or Semedo on the right. I would obviously prefer Semedo, but this type of game, you could play Vidal or even Sergio Roberto on the right back. And then the same midfield, except Iniesta. They probably might change out for Gomes or I don't even know, someone else. And then at the top, I would like to see Deuces start. At least it gives us a right winger, a true right winger, and then have Suarez in the middle, and then obviously Messi wherever he roams. And so I think they should get the points. Olympiacos, like I was doing a little research before, really hard to find kind of information on it. The player to watch I found on them was a Brazilian striker, Seba, but he has this season so far more cards than goals. So that's not a good stat to have, right? He has 3 cards and 0 goals. So not looking too good, but he's young and he's got a lot of potential, but he's the player they have. They have a lot of Greek players. Not really anything too worried about the Olympiacos. Again, the other thing too, it's going to be a comfortable environment. It's going to be in the Camp Nou. So obviously with the field dimensions, Barcelona should have possession. I'm calling maybe a 4-1, a 4-0 type of victory, I'm hoping. But I think they should easily beat Olympiacos.
Yeah, and again, depending upon the lineup, if it is a particularly strong lineup, I think we could potentially see a blowout here, like a really bad one. Then again, you never know. If Olympiacos might just go super defensive and really just try and hold them off and maybe see if they can grab a draw. I'm wondering how much confidence they have going into this match. Probably not a whole lot. But so the more interesting match would be next Saturday in La Liga against Malaga, and this is at the Camp Nou. And, you know, my thoughts on this, I'm just, for some reason, the loss to Malaga that was in Malaga last year is just still really stuck in my mind. That was such a disappointing loss. It was right in the midst of all of that that real kind of valley they were having where the form just wasn't there. And, you know, it seemed like they were improving, but then they would fall back. And it was right in the middle of that whole situation. I think it was also right around the time that I'd started making my podcast. So maybe that's why it sticks in my mind so much. But in any case, this situation, you know, we're at the Camp Nou, new manager, new dynamic in the squad, a lot more teamwork happening, able to pull out tight wins against, you know, lesser, quote unquote, lesser teams, as we've seen. So, you know, hopefully we can get another win on this. But who's the Malaga player to watch this week?
So the Malaga player to watch is Diego Roland. He's a Uruguayan, 24 years old. He's on loan from Bordeaux, and he's a center forward. He's a typical Uruguayan center forward, like our boy Mantooth Suarez. He has a couple goals. He has a lot of potential. Strong physical in the air. I was kind of watching the YouTube highlight reel of him. Obviously, anyone on YouTube highlights look freaking amazing, but just to kind of get an idea of his style, he's an aerial threat. A lot of people in Malaga are really happy to have him this year. He's basically on a one-year loan to get more playing time, develop a little bit more, and they say that the team is really happy with his performance. He seems like a really good guy. He's also got on the national team as well for Uruguay, so he'll be playing in the World Cup. Well, he should be on the World Cup squad coming up as well. I think also the Malaga match for me stands out, like for you, when you started your podcast and so forth. For me, it was like the epitome of Luis Enrique's tenure. It was like he didn't take Malaga seriously. He didn't rotate the squad. We hadn't won in Malaga in forever, and he just kind of just threw away La Liga with that match because we needed that match to get points, you know? So obviously in the Camp Nou, it's going to be a different story. Obviously with the field dimensions, it always puts us in an advantage. And also, I think they should win. It's going to be a tough match because Michel, the manager, has them playing pretty well. And they're always a tough team. They're a strong team. They're physical. They're not as physical as I would say Atleti, but they're a pretty good team. And we'll see what happens. I'm curious to see because if they kill, or if they have a good showing against Olympiacos, then he can rest Busquets. He can do these type of things to have them fresh for the Saturday match.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out that right now Malaga is in 20th place. They're at the very bottom of the table. And just like you've pointed out with all the smaller teams, and Malaga is more of a mid-sized team, you know, but whenever these smaller teams go up against Barcelona, it's huge for them. Everyone gets up for that. And it's like you said, it's like their Super Bowl. So even though they're in 20th place and they are really not off to a great start in La Liga, they can definitely create some threats. They can be very defensive. They can catch us out if we make mistakes. So there is that potential, and they're going to want to come to Barcelona, come to the Camp Nou, and make some kind of showing. So it's not going to be an easy game, and I would expect Valverde to know that, to not take it lightly, to take Malaga seriously, and do everything he can to really put a, you know, put a good lineup out there and get the 3 points.
I mean, for the most part, you know, Val Green's been doing really well with the squad rotation. This is the time that you should rotate the squad because we don't have these big games yet in a row where we need consistency in the lineup. So I'm perfectly happy to see a little rotation in the Olympiacos and then also the Malaga, but keeping a core. Obviously, Messi's going to play in all those games because that guy is not human, right? The guy, I don't know what he does. He sleeps like right. in a hyperbaric chamber at night. I don't know what he does. Like, I don't know if he's like a vampire and he's immortal or something. I don't know. But the other players, it's great to get more playing time, more exposure, and getting more confidence. If they win, it just helps us in the long run if someone gets injured or something like this. I trust Val Green's going to have a good week. And plus, the other thing, too, is both matches are at home. So that's definitely going to help with the comfortability, the players just being at ease because they're at home, and also the Camp Nou giving us that home field advantage with the dimensions of the field.
That's it for this week, everybody. Be a part of the show. Give us your comments, your questions, topics you'd like us to discuss, and you can do that by visiting us at BarçaTalk.net. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to rate, review, and spread the word about Barça Talk to your friends. For now, I'm Brian Henderson.
I'm Gabriel Quiroga.
And this has been Barça Talk. Have a great week, everyone. Visca Barça.
Visca Barça. Thank you.